Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your next order. Let's go to the mailbag. Jason Tatum, X-Factors, and coaching. We'll do this on this Tuesday, Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I am their Boston Celtics beat reporter, welcoming you back to a Tuesday Locked On Celtics podcast. If you're new, we do this Monday through Friday. I host the show. Follow me on Twitter at RedsArmy_John. Shoot me a question, a comment, whatever. Follow the show at LO Celtics on Twitter. And today, I figured it would be a good time to dip back into the mailbag. If people had questions, we'll see what's going on between round one, round two. Celtics obviously going to face the Toronto Raptors. We know that that's going to be on Thursday. That first game is going to be at like 6:30. I think the Celtics are going to be, Celtics-Raptors is going to be one of those primetime series. So that's happening on Thursday. The Celtics did not practice on Monday. So we'll have media availability Tuesday and Wednesday to get something from the guys. So great opportunity to throw it out there to people on Twitter to say, hey, if you've got a question, ask it, and I'll see if I can answer. All of these questions, it's going to be the whole show, first, second, third segment. Later on, questions about Jason Tatum. Second segment, questions about X-Factors in the series. But we're going to start with Rita at Smiley Jogger, who asked this question. Brad is making timely substitutions and timeouts this season. Is this because he has more authority without a superstar ego on the team? Was he allowed to do that last season? Is he more confident in his system or gotten better? How much will this be a coach's chess match? I wonder about this because Brett Brown seems so likable, but Simmons wouldn't shoot and Embiid didn't get in amazing shape under him. How much autonomy are coaches given in choosing accountability, playing time, and rotations? It's an excellent question, and it speaks to the quality of a franchise, and it's not just about one guy doing one thing. It's not just about Brad Stevens having Kyrie and not having Kyrie. It's about organizational greatness. So what makes a successful coach? Obviously, you've got to be good, but good coaches fail. Good coaches get fired. You know, Doc Rivers got fired in Orlando and then went to Boston and ended up winning a championship. Why? Because he had better players, players who were willing to listen, and organizational stability. And I think organizational stability is a huge part of this and why some coaches succeed or fail. So Brett Brown is a good example. Brett Brown fired on Monday. No surprise there. And he starts out under Sam Hinkie. They go through that process, that literal process. And then Hinkie's forced out and Colangelo comes in. And that becomes a whole different situation. And Colangelo goes out, and now Elton Brand is in. And the way that whole thing shook out, there are like three or four or five different plans. So when Rita brings up Ben Simmons won't shoot and Embiid didn't get in amazing shape, because they know, and they were treated a certain way from the beginning, that they don't expect to be held accountable. They're not... They know that they don't have to do certain things and it's not going to matter. It's not going to impact their standing in Philly. I mean, one of the most telling quotes from Ben Simmons from the beginning of the year. And I say it's a quote. I don't have the quote in front of me, but the gist of the quote was that he was asked about certain aspects of his game and, hey, you know, you don't shoot threes. And he said, basically said, but I'm still an all-star. And the message was, I don't have to do this because I'm still an all-star. And organizationally, why is he allowed to say that? Why is Embiid allowed to go through this and still not be in the type of shape he needs to be in? Because the organization doesn't hold him accountable. The organization doesn't have the structure to say, hey, you know, this is unacceptable. This is how we're going to do things. So back to the original question about Brad and his substitutions and timeouts. I think the substitutions are a function of not necessarily the ego of a superstar, but how the team is built. And this is the contrast between Brett Brown and, hey, you know, he was a good coach and got extended. When Brett Brown was hired, he was hired to kind of like be the Spurs influence on a young team. And eventually, I think their plan was, you know, he's going to see the young guys through and kind of help them grow. And then we'll get a more established guy to come in and kind of push them across the finish line. But things were working out between Simmons and Embiid. And when people were saying, hey, they're going to grow into certain things, they're going to grow into certain types of players, you know, this guy deserves to see it through. He was a good coach at that point. But then things fall apart as the expectations change and those guys don't make those leaps. So Brad Stevens, as he goes along, he has a different team now than he did last year. And the timeouts this year versus last year are a little bit different when you have Kyrie Irving and Al Horford on the floor, guys who are known, and especially Kyrie, known for being able to work through certain things. Like, there are times where a coach won't call a timeout and he'll just say, look, these guys know what they're doing. We're going to let them figure it out. Like, you on the floor can figure this out. I trust you guys to run an offense, get a good shot, create something, or I trust you, superstar player, to go out there and create something for yourself that's going to stop this run. So it's not necessarily the ego. It's that, you know, Kyrie knows how to create his own shot. And Kyrie can manufacture a 10-0 run out of nowhere just for himself. It's not about being allowed to do anything or more confident or less confident. Construction of the team allows for different approaches. So this year, and especially in the bubble, I criticized him. I think earlier this year there were certainly instances where he didn't use his timeouts the way I thought you normally would. I think part of that is depending. I feel like I'm kind of going like zigzagging through my point here, but there's so much to this question. How you approach a game and how you coach a game in November, December is different than how you coach a game in, you know, April, May, June, what should be April, May, June. Now it's August. But you cannot call timeouts at certain points and kind of like, it's kind of like throwing somebody into the deep end of the pool and saying, you got to figure out how to swim. And later on, you can call a timeout in a situation where you didn't earlier. And that's just, hey, look, we can't mess around. This, the time for lessons is done. We're going to stop this right now and regroup. So how a coach coaches a game changes depending on the situation, depending on the players, depending on playoffs versus regular season, depending on, you know, injuries, the opponent, you know, the way you coach. You can coach one day against the Clippers and coach differently 2 days later against Orlando, because certain teams do certain things better. And you know, hey, if I call a timeout here and I let these guys set up, then that coach is too good at setting things up. I'd rather let this work and not give them the opportunity to rest if they're an older team, or scheme if they've got good coaching, or substitute if there's a guy who's been sitting on the bench that if you call a timeout to, you know, set yourself and reset something, you still allow a fresh guy and another guy to come in that might not, it might be a counterpoint to or counteraction to what you're trying to do. All of this is to say that it's much more complicated than the premise of having more authority or having a superstar ego. Certainly, if there's a superstar, there are times where you might not call a timeout. You say, look, go Kyrie, go Cook, get us out of this. There's certainly some of that. And if you call a timeout, Kyrie might get pissed. There's certainly some of that. But organizational stability that exists in Boston leaves a lot of this other stuff out. Like, was he allowed to do certain things? Brad Stevens is allowed to do whatever he wants. And he's trusted to do whatever he wants, because whatever Brad Stevens wants is generally working towards trying to win a game. What Brett Brown got out of Simmons and didn't get out of Simmons and Embiid, it's a different story. I mean, those guys are, there's so many different influences down there. Each personality is different. One superstar can be good with, everything can be the exact same, but you plug one star in and you do action A and it backfires. You put a different star in there, you do that same action and it's perfectly fine. So there's personalities involved, and Simmons and Embiid certainly were not, they have resistance to certain things for a variety of reasons. Coaches can run their programs depending on how the organization, how stable the organization is. Like, Coach Pop can run his program however the damn hell he wants, and he earned that, but he always could, because that's how the Spurs were. And I think when you look at these coaches who have grown into roles, who have stuck around, like Billy Donovan in OKC, strong front office, trust, and these guys can go and do the things that they're trying to do, the things that they want to do, and they can trust. If the front office and the coaches trust each other, then they can build a team. And back to one last point on the Philly thing. Brett Brown had three different front offices and three different motivations, and I don't know that he was really in on building that team. And I don't even think that Philly was building a team necessarily, that they were hoping to kind of react well together. I kind of feel like what Philly was doing was kind of a some sort of version of what Danny Ainge was doing in trying to keep that big three window and getting guys like Jermaine O'Neal in here. And it was just, who's available to try to make this work? And you didn't really give much thought to fit. It was, hey, Al Horford is a free agent. If we get him, then that takes an obstacle away from Embiid. It gives us a guy that has had success defending Giannis. Let's just bring him in. And that, there's no thought to, like, hey, should he be playing next to Joel Embiid? So that affects the coaching. That affects a lot of different things. It's all very, very complicated. The mixtures are volatile. But I think ultimately the bottom line here with Brad Stevens this year is that he's got a group that that's fully on board. This is a fully connected group. If there's ever something that rubs somebody the wrong way, they can talk about it and work through it. It's the complete opposite of last year's group. And a few tweaks, some personal growth, some different motivations make one year terrible and the next year great, even though a lot of people are the same. But yeah, this I could do an hour on the coaches and what's going on. I'll even get into the chess match a little bit, but first I'm going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the chess match, a couple of other things here, wrap that up, and get into some of the X factors. I'm going to get myself a Built Bar after this show because I'm hungry, and it's a great meal replacement, and it's delicious. Sometimes, I'm not a big sweet tooth kind of guy, but sometimes when I've got a craving for something sweet, something like a Built Bar does a great, it does the trick, and it does it in a kind of healthy way because obviously there are great flavors. They've got a new flavor now called Caramel Brownie and Lemon Almond Cheesecake. And they've got some great regular ones like Peanut Butter and Banana Bread. If you've got a nut allergy, there are plenty of non-nut ones that you can have. They're all covered in 100% chocolate. They're all soft and easy to chew, but mostly they're healthy. And this is the best part about them. I can have one to satisfy a craving. I can have one to satisfy a sweet tooth. I can have one after I go lift and help me if I'm trying to, you know, build some muscle with that protein. It's a high protein, low calorie, low sugar, high fiber bar. It's great for the keto diet. It's just a great healthy option that you can get. And right now you can get $10 off your next order. Even if you've used the promo code LOCKEDON once, you can use it again because they've reset. They've reformulated their bars. They want everybody to go buy some more. So use the promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. You get $10 off your next order. And as long as supplies last, you get a free cooler with your purchase. So go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off. That's right, $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can even follow us on Spotify. Back to the questions. I'm going to just wrap up a little bit here on that question from Rita about this being a chess match between the Celtics and the Raptors. I think it certainly is going to be a chess match because these teams are both so evenly matched, and without Gordon Hayward, there's certainly going to have to be some maneuvering from the Celtics. And already the coaching chess match is going to begin because we don't know yet if Kyle Lowry is going to be available. He had a sprained ankle. Don't know how serious it is. Don't know what his availability is. I'm assuming he's going to play. And it's not hard for the Celtics to say, okay, if he plays, we do this. If he doesn't play, we do that. We know what their options are going to be with playing, if he's playing, if he's not playing. It's not a big secret, but, you know, gamesmanship. Make the Celtics prepare for something. Make them waste time on an option that wasn't happening. You never know. If they take 45 minutes and 20 minutes to do, you know, hey, this is the non-Lowry thing, and hey, haha, we got you to waste 20 minutes of practice time preparing for not having Kyle Lowry. He's fine. Don't worry about it. Gotcha. Like, so that's how it starts. But yeah, there's going to have to be, and Nick Nurse is really, really good at this. He's a coach of the year for a reason. He's going to throw a lot of different looks at the Celtics. Out of nowhere, they're going to go into a zone. Out of nowhere, there's going to be a full court press. Out of nowhere, there's going to be a random kind of like different, almost high school defense. Like they're going to pull some different tricks. And because the Celtics have Tatum and Brown and Kemba, That's going to be, they're going to try a lot of different creative defenses. And the thing that really makes Toronto tough is that they're all on board. They're like, yeah, whatever it is, we'll do it. So yes, this is going to be, the coaching is going to be a major, major storyline here because the adjustments, the lineup tweaks, all of that stuff, that's going to have a significant impact on who wins this series. At It's a Joke, who is prominently going to be featured from here on out in this podcast, says, not a question, but I hate how the narrative is that the Celtics only won because the Sixers didn't have Ben Simmons, but the Raptors get praised for sweeping the Nets. Okay, two things here. I don't think that's the narrative for this series. From what I've heard, I mean, obviously Ben Simmons is an all-star level player, and not having that all-star level player certainly is part of the storyline. If they had had Simmons, this would have been a much different series. No one's questioning that. I don't think the narrative is that, hey, Simmons, if they had Simmons, they would have won this series. I think most people just acknowledge that if they had Simmons, this would have been a different series. Celtics probably would have won because the Sixers are such a mess, but it would have been a different series. The Raptors get praised for sweeping the Nets, even though the Nets are missing everybody and we're basically pulling people off the street. But the Raptors get praised for sweeping the Nets because the Raptors beat the shit out of the Nets. And the Celtics, even though they swept, were in a slugfest that, aside from game two, was still in doubt. And if Brad Stevens were here, would say, hey, that series could have easily been 3-1 Sixers. But three of those games were within reach at very late stages of the game. So it's different. And that's why people are going to say, hey, who knows? Who knows if this goes 5, 6, 7, if they have Simmons? The Raptors get praised for sweeping the Nets because, you know, their bench scored 100 points in the last game. It's an anomaly. It's a weird thing that to have happen. And there are reasons why it happened, but it's, you know, when you're setting historical records, yeah, that's going to change the narrative a little bit. So, moving on. Who do you think the X factor for both teams in this series is going to be? This is from Mr. Hojo19. One person each team. And I'm going to combine this with Eric Saint, at Eric J. Saint. Do you see Rob Williams with an expanded role in the series? He played really well in their earlier matchup against Toronto. As you can tell, this is my X factor for the Celtics. An X factor is like, I mean, I see, obviously, I think, you know, Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum. Can I say Jason Tatum is the X factor? Because if your star player sucks in a series, then that's obviously an X factor. X factor is supposed to be a guy that, like, maybe you don't expect. So I'm going to go with Robert Williams as an X factor for the Celtics because I don't think that Enes Kanter is going to be playable in that Toronto series. They're too quick. They run that pick and roll too well. So Enes Kanter is just not going to be a guy that's you're going to rely on like they did against Philly. So with Robert Williams, can he put that pressure on the opposing defense? Can he put that pressure on Gasol or Ibaka when he's out there to protect the rim, give up some space, and allow Kemba, Jalen, Jason to do their work? That's really where Robert Williams is going to go catch a couple of lobs, and he's going to block a couple of shots. But really, if Rob Williams can get into a pick, set that pick, and clear out quickly, and get to the rim, and technically speaking, the speed at which you get out of that pick is important, because if you hang there and you don't get out of it and head to the rim when you're Robert Williams, that means that's a step longer that that big can hang. And it's a step longer that someone from the opposite side can come in and tag him. Meaning, if he sets the pick at the free throw line or up at the three-point line, by the time he rolls to the basket, if that guy on the other side of the floor, the perimeter defender, if he can come down and tag Robert Williams, touch him, physically touch him, and impede his progress, then that's perfect pick and roll defense that disrupts the timing, that can throw things off, and he still has time to get back to his guy. But if you go set the pick, get out quick, then that other guy on the perimeter doesn't have time to slide over and tag the roll man. Doesn't have time to come over and tag Robert Williams. The big can't come over and show and impede the guard's progress. He has to go back and contend. It forces that defender to make a choice. So if Robert Williams can go in, set the pick, get out, roll hard, that puts an immense amount of pressure on Toronto's defense. That's going to make it, that alone, I think, can open up those mid-range jumpers that Kemba was drilling against the Sixers. That's going to open those things up. That's going to open up those opportunities. That's what's going to open up drives to the rim. And if Gasol or Ibaka take a step back too far because Robert Williams is a threat to catch that lob, then that one extra step that they're back means that's one extra step they have to take to get forward, which means instead of contesting a shot, that's a foul. Those little things, those little kind of nuanced things are the difference between Kemba three-point plays, Tatum three-point plays, Smart three-point plays, and an Ibaka block shot, Toronto going the other way. Those little things. So that's why Robert Williams is my X factor. Just in that pick and roll, he can do so much. So that's something that I'm going to watch for. Toronto's X factor, I'm going to go with Norm Powell because he can be such a potent scorer off the bench. And if Kyle Lowry is limited at all, then they're going to need Norm Powell to really step up. So without going too deep into that analysis, because I'm going to save that, we'll try to do a crossover with the Lockdown Raptors. I think Norm Powell is going to be huge for the Raptors, either as a Kyle Lowry replacement, or if Lowry's fine, then he's going to be a huge piece of that bench unit coming in, and that's going to be where Toronto really shines. Celtics, Raptors, starters can kind of cancel each other out, but if Powell can come in and be big off the bench, then who matches him? Does Marcus Smart match him off the bench? I mean, he can in a lot of ways, but if Powell can come in and have a 20-plus point night off the bench, then that's really going to put – it's going to really hurt and put a lot of pressure on the Celtics. When we come back, some more on Jason Tatum. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. All right, welcome to the It's a Joke section of the podcast. Alexander Mejia had a lot of questions, and so I've already asked one, and there's one comment. I'm going to go here, wrap up the show with a few of his, and they're all Jason Tatum. Does this series help us determine who is better between Tatum and Spicy P? Obviously, Pascal Siakam. Does Tatum... Let me start with that, because these are all Tatum related. Does it determine who's better? I think Tatum has stepped ahead of Siakam. Somewhere in the middle of the season when Tatum was going off, I think he surpassed Siakam. But certainly if Siakam has a big series, then that can change a little bit of the dynamic. But Siakam, it may boil down to the three-point shooting, which has been a general weakness for Siakam. In the past, it's been problematic. Now, this year, it's been better. It's certainly gotten better recently. This season, it was right about 36%. Last year's at 37%. But his two prior years, it was 22 and 14. So a little bit of a dip this year, but he's taking a lot more of them. If Tatum can drill his step back and sidestep threes, and if Siakam struggles from three, even if he's hitting, getting those spin moves off in the lane, I think that can solidify, and the few holdouts that might still exist can acknowledge that Tatum has surpassed him. But I think it's starting to feel generally accepted that Tatum has become a better player than Siakam. Next question from Alexander. What does Tatum need to do to be in the ranks of Harden and Curry? It's interesting because I have a piece that is coming out tomorrow on masslive.com/Celtics. And it's the Sunday performances where Tatum put together kind of a star performance against the Sixers, where 16 of his 28 points came in a basically 10-minute stretch from the end of the third quarter into the fourth. And like the types of shots that it was hitting were like backbreakers, killer shots, 15 rebounds, two block shots. That was a star game. That's a game that a star puts out. And then the next game, Luka Doncic goes off and just, it was like 43 points, 13 assists and 17 rebounds or something like that. And that was like, okay, that's a superstar performance. That's the performance that when we're talking about what we want Tatum to be, Luka's there. Like that's, and so we're talking about Harden and Curry and those guys. What does it take to be in those ranks? Well, first of all, those guys have a certain extraordinarily special quality, right? Like Harden is one of the best just point getters in basketball history. He has mastered that step back, and that's just that he's shown to be like just special in a certain kind of way. Curry can pull up from anywhere, like almost anywhere on the floor. He pulls up from half court, you think it's got a shot going in. Like he's got a very special skill. And on top of that, they do other things very, very well too. Harden can pass, Curry can pass, Luka Doncic can see things on the floor. Those guys have special abilities. And Tatum has to really find that special ability. And it's not that he can't. He certainly can. And he certainly might. But he has to find these certain aspects of his game where he can just impose his will whenever he decides and do it in a way that it just doesn't matter what the hell you throw at him. He's shown that he can do that this season in stretches. He's shown that he can take over in stretches. He's certainly given us the glimpses of that. Can he do that? How consistently can he do that? How often can he do that? This has been a weird season, so we don't have the complete picture. If you remember, like when it started happening in January, February, March, slowed down a tiny bit, and then everything stopped. Now he's back here and he's starting to do it again. But like, okay, let's get back to a regular, normal season, and let's see, what can he do? Can he start doing that? And you know, he's got to add elements to his game. His ball handling certainly has to get tighter. Like he needs that handle to be perfect. He can't be losing the ball like he does a little too often. He needs that vision to be even better. Like, he's learned now to pass out of double teams, and he's seeing things that he hasn't seen, that he wasn't seeing at the beginning of the season. Now take it to the next level. And what does Luka do? What do these other guys do that Tatum isn't doing? Tatum is great now, or becoming great, at reading things, reacting, and making the right play. What he's not doing, I don't think, is manipulating the defense so he can create that right play. And that's what Luka did in that game on Sunday. That's what these other guys can do, is manipulate the game so you as a defender are kind of playing into their hands. That's the level. That's the next level for Tatum. And look, the way he's playing now is an all NBA level. It's a star level. He's probably second team all NBA, third team all NBA, somewhere in that range. So he's got the ability to reach this level. He's a star player. You know, this guy that's playing right now is an all-star and maybe an all-star starter. But now we're asking, okay, how do you become that next level on top of that? Now you got to manipulate the game. Now you've got to go out there and do what Luka did, do what these other guys do. Is, oh, I see this defender over here. Oh, this is who you got? Okay, I'm going to do this, and you're gonna react how I want you to react, because I want to get the ball to this guy. And if you do what I want you to do, then I'm going to be able to make this play. Whereas Tatum is trying to do what he's going to do, and if somebody comes to stop him, he's good at recognizing, ah, okay, these guys have done this. Now I have to make this play. He's not, I don't think, intentionally doing certain things to specifically open guys up. Like, that's just, we're talking genius level shit here. Like, this is something that's hard to do and hard to master. A guy like Luka has it. He just has it. Like, it's ingrained. He has it. These other guys, they have it. They developed it. They fostered it, and they've been able to make it something that's even better, and a better skill. So Tatum can certainly master it. If you learn enough, you go out there, you play enough, you say, oh my God, if I do this, then I can start being the puppeteer. I can start playing these guys like, ah, okay. So Tatum is only in his third year, so different people develop at different levels. So that's the next thing. That's the next thing. It'd be interesting to see. I think he can get there. I certainly think he can get there. If he's gotten this far, he can get there. But there's still a gap between Tatum and those guys at the very, very top. And finally, did Jaylen actually have a higher rise in level of play than Tatum? I don't think so. But I think Jaylen had an equal rise in level of play. I think they both took basically equal steps forward. And those are tremendous steps forward. But I think they both found a level of play that I certainly didn't expect at this point. You know, that's on me. But they took huge steps forward. I thought that they've each developed signature shots. They've each developed their, you know, kind of go-to moves. I think Jaylen's is kind of like that fadeaway in the middle of the lane. That's something that he can rely on. Tatum is that sidestep three. And they're building off of that. Their vision has certainly gotten better. Jaylen's ball handling has gotten a lot better. Jaylen's confidence from three has been great. His if you want to like put two columns together and see, maybe one took like a tiny step forward more. I don't know. I just say it's going to be equal, and we should all be happy. As you know, if you're a Celtics fan and you're watching what Jalen and Jason have done this year, those steps forward have been tremendous and amazing. And so I would just be thankful that they both took such significant steps forward. Thanks for all of the questions, especially at is two S's underscore a underscore joke at is a joke. Thanks for the questions, everybody. Rita, Mr. Hojo 19, Eric J. Saint, everybody, really appreciate that. If you're a new listener, thanks for tuning in. Hope you liked it enough to subscribe. Regular listeners who have subscribed, a 5-star rating, a good written review. Tell your friends, tell them to follow the show on Spotify. Keep growing that audience. Last week was the biggest audience ever. Well, I'm greedy. I want it to be even bigger this week. I want it to be even bigger next week. Let's keep growing this show. It's really fun to do. I love doing it for you guys. So thanks for listening. Hope you appreciate it. Tomorrow, the Wednesday show, I'm going to be on Locked On NBA as well. So I do the Wednesday Locked On NBA podcast. Subscribe to that, please. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.